everyone. Welcome to episode 6 of season 9 of Move Your Minute, the Deadly Podcast, where we yippee-ki our way through the final two Die Hard movies, Die Hard 4 and Die Hard 5, 5 minutes at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again today is Todd Liebenow of the Forgotten Filmcast. Welcome back to the show, Todd.
Thank you, Rob. Great to be here.
Yes, yes. Hope you had a nice weekend. Hope you enjoyed yourself. Getting a little bit of break, from talking about Live Free or Die Hard. But I'm glad you're back.
Glad to be here.
Excellent. So episode 6 begins with John jumping off the car and ends with Bowden getting interrupted. So we ended things yesterday with John getting into an accident, which we know what it was caused by, but John does not. And, he stood up on his car to look around, saw a lot of strange things going on, and this time he jumps off the car. And as he's jumping off the car, he's still walking around people, looking around, trying to figure out what's going on. And then he knows something very suspicious, and he says to Farrell, "All the lights are green." And Farrell goes, "What?" He goes, "All the lights are green. Let's go. Right now. We got to go. Get your bag, hack boy. Let's go."
Hack boy.
You serious?
What kind of name is that?
He goes, "You serious?" He goes, "Let's go." And then he goes, "Well, I've never been in a car accident." He goes, "Well, it's very exciting. This way. Come on." "You've been in a car accident?" "Yeah." And they start moving down the street. And then he goes, "What are we doing?" And he goes, "It's a little thing they invented in the 60s called jogging. You're going to love it."
I always thought of the jogging craze as being more the 70s. But what do I know? I was just a kid back
then. Well, because anyone who's seen Forrest Gump knows it's the 70s. Come on.
Oh, yeah. Right. Exactly.
But we can actually talk about that. So
what? You've got stuff about jogging? I never would have thought it.
Of course I do. See, after your comments on Friday, I had to do a little bit more research over the weekend to make sure that Todd wouldn't, once again blast me for not looking up that they were actually in Baltimore instead of Washington. So I said, all right, I'll go with the jogging. So jogging is a form of trotting or running at a slower, leisurely pace. And the main intention is to increase physical fitness with less stress on the body than from faster running, but more than walking, or to maintain a steady speed for longer periods of time. Performed over long distances, it's a form of aerobic endurance training. Okay. The term jog was used in, first of all, the etymology, they don't really know when it is, but they know that it did start in England in the 16th century. And Shakespeare even has a quote using jog in it. If any clue what Shakespeare play might have it.
What Shakespeare play would have it? Boy, I do not know. I will just say Romeo and Juliet.
It's from Taming of the Shrew.
Why not?
Taming of the Shrew. And the okay. quote is, "You may be jogging while your boots are green," which meant to leave the room and stuff like that. Okay. It was then later used in a lot of literature to describe short, quick movements, either intentional or unintentional. And sometimes it would be used to describe a quick shake or jar.
Well, that one I get. Right. Yeah.
And then at a certain point, they started referring to people as joggers that were quickly moving people who brushed others aside as they passed by. And there's a novel in 1884 called My Home Run by an Australian author who wrote, "Your bedroom curtains were still drawn as I passed on my morning jog."
Okay.
Originally, jogging for athletes in training was known as road work. Boxers would do road work and stuff like that when they would be running miles a day to, as part of their conditioning and stuff like that. And in the
like when you have those scenes of Rocky, the the coach is in the back of the truck and the guy and the boxer is jogging behind him. Yeah.
Right. And I think of Rocky with that type of stuff. And in the 60s and 70s, they started just referring to it as jogging instead of road work. There was a coach named Arthur Lydiard. He actually popularized the term jogging at the time instead of using it as road work. And they started using it in sports articles and stuff like that, where they would refer to fitness and sociability with jogging and things like that. And then they actually opened up the Auckland Joggers Club. And that's that's apparently the first time that someone used the term as a noun.
Okay.
Yeah. And they began in the 60s in like Oregon and places like that, where they would have joggers clubs. And actually a guy in Eugene, Oregon published a book, a track coach at the University of Oregon, Bill Bowerman, published a book called Jogging in 1966, which would popularize jogging in the U.S. So, you see, there we go. We both are wrong about the fact that it wasn't Forrest Gump who started it.
Yeah.
Yeah. They actually did a medical study in 2015 in Denmark. That jogging would reduce mortality compared to both non-jogging and other strenuous jogging. The optimal amount per week is 1 to 2.5 hours. The optimal frequency was less than or equal to 3 times per week, and an optimal speed was slow or average. And they did a study with more than 230,000 participants, and they found that runners were 27%. Had a 27% lower risk of death than non-runners during 5.5 to 35 year follow up. Wow, this is a study that went back really far.
Long study.
But you see, I think joggers have more of a risk of getting hit by cars than regular people. You
know. Yeah, depending on what you're doing, your jogging, that's, I guess.
Yeah. So whatever. So John and Farrell start jogging, but again, John is right about the facts that it started in the 60s. So that I guess the writer did his work, making sure that he got the information correct about that. And we get an overhead view of the crash site where John just leaves his car, doesn't really care.
Yeah. He never sees his car again.
Probably not.
Probably still sitting in a junkyard in Baltimore. I hope he
took out the ammunition that was in the glove compartment. That's all I can say.
Yeah. Because things heat up.
And John probably will need it at some point. That's my assumption.
Yes.
And so then we're back in the DOJ room, the dimly lit DOJ room.
Yes, they still haven't turned on the lights.
And Bowman then, one of the guys next to Bowman, whose name is Raj, says, sir, Chicago's reporting a systems crash on the L train network. Do you know who the actor is who plays Raj?
I do not.
Okay, so he is actually an actor very well known by probably a lot of people listening here. I didn't catch it. He's... Sung Kang, and he was he is in the Fast and Furious franchise. He plays Han.
Oh, okay. I was gonna say, as soon as you said that name, it's like I know that name from somewhere. I mean, I admit I don't follow the Fast and Furious as closely. I've watched them all and am delighted by their weirdness, but I gotta admit I don't know. I don't have every little detail of them committed to memory.
That's fair. So he was born on the 8th of April, 1972. He has 72 IMDb credits. Obviously, he is mostly known for his work on the Fast and Furious movies as Han. And I never knew this. They actually have a prequel to to Fast and Furious called Better Luck Tomorrow. And that's basically his character's origin story.
Yes, yeah, I've never seen that. Yeah. Yeah, so, me neither.
You know, I'm interested in checking that out. See how the whole thing goes. And then after Raj says his stuff, then we have another character named Melina, who is on the phone and then looks up and starts saying, Amtrak is flashing a level one crash in their comm system. So do you know who this actor is?
No, I did not dig into a bunch of the actors.
Spend your weekend one. Properly.
I spent too much time trying to look up actually in Washington, D.C. than I did the actors.
So it's the character Melina is played by Zelko Ivanic, who has 113 IMDb credits. He's originally from Slovenia. You see him pop up in so many movies in small parts. He was born on August 15th, 1957. So we don't really know what Melina's position is here, but he's part of the team. And, we see that a lot of things are going on here. And then he says, FAA just issued a critical alert. Their ATC network just went down. And then the obvious response is, we're under attack. And that is said by another actor who's here, by Christina Chang. And, she has 63 IMDb credits. And the one that jumped out at me, besides this movie, obviously, is there's a TV show running now called The Good Doctor, which she's been on 115 episodes of. So she's...
Oh, okay. I've heard of it. Right. I haven't watched it.
Correct. But Bowman's right. They are definitely under attack. Yeah. And then we're back with we're back in Gabriel's lair, and we see their computers, and they decide that they're going to continue with more stuff. So Gabriel then says, "Okay, let's get him outside for a little fresh air." And we see Casper, playing with the computer a little bit. We see that he goes into the U.S. Department of Homeland Security, and we get a very interesting shot of five different types of viruses or something like that they can do. You have, first of all, six sectors where they're connected to here, and then you have anthrax, smallpox, sarin gas, radiation, and vesicant agents. Okay, so I'm not going to go into what all of them are because of time issues. But the one thing that jumped out at me is the vesicant issue. What the hell is a vesicant agent? Have you ever heard of a vesicant agent?
I have no idea.
Okay, so apparently there's another name for it, and it's called a blister agent. And it's basically from mustard gas and things like that. You know, during World War One, they used those things, the idea is that. It's a chemical compound that causes severe skin, eye, and mucosal pain and irritation. In the form of severe chemical burns resulting in fluid-filled blisters. And named for their ability to cause vesication, blister agents refers in common parlance to those agents which are developed for or have been in the past utilized as chemical weapons. The naturally occurring substances such as... Canthridin fall under the same terminology. Exposure to blister agents is widely incapacitating, but often precipitates a delayed effect, with symptoms developing 1 to 24 hours following the initial contact with the agent. Treatment for acute exposure is largely supportive, with the exception of Lewisite, for which an antidote is available.
Canthridin. So, believe it or not, the company that I've work for we used to sell Cantharidin. it's used in dermatology, and it's actually, I don't know all the ins and outs of it, but basically it comes from beetles. It's the secretions of beetles, but yeah, it's used for various
you mean like John Ringo, Paul, and those beetles.
Yeah, that kind of beetles. Yeah.
I wasn't sure. I wanted to double check, you know. Okay.
Yeah, we don't offer it anymore. We used to, though. No, it's just various other things where we weren't able to offer it any longer. But yeah, okay. it's like many things out there, it's stuff that, you know, you read certain things and you see it in a negative context, but a lot of these things have positive applications too. I mean, fentanyl is always in the news and stuff. And I tell people, you know, I sell fentanyl every day. They're like, what? There's a good use for fentanyl? I was like, yeah, absolutely.
Or just maybe Todd's a drug dealer.
I am a drug dealer. That's what, when people ask me what I do for a living these days, I say I'm a drug dealer.
okay. so anyone who needs to get fentanyl.
no, not like that.
No. Just kidding. Right. So basically, they set off all these alarms. And on the computer, and then the next thing we know, we see a shot of Washington, and this time it really is Washington, because you can see the Jefferson Memorial, and you can see the Capitol in the background. This is not Baltimore. Yeah. The camera crew has left Baltimore. and then we get a shot inside with Molina, who goes, "That's the anthrax alarm." And then Bowman says, "All right,
I kinda like,
now.
Is there an alarm for every different thing? I mean, I would think there's just a general alarm to tell you to get out of the building. I wouldn't have thought, you know, that there's specifically one for anthrax and specifically one for whatever else. You know,
and just sarin gas and radiation and
right. Messaging
agents. You know, those type of things."
And I mean, and just the fact that they know which one is which, I mean, do they have to drill this? A lot of times they set off an alarm and go, "Oh, that's the anthrax alarm." Like, no. I'm pretty sure that's the sarin gas alarm, you know, and they're tested on these things regularly. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know either. it's hard to tell, but it gives you something to think about.
Yeah, I mean, I'm okay with there just being one alarm. You know, alarm goes off, get out of the building. I mean, that's my, you know, that's basic enough for me. But of course, people don't even do that now. I mean, you know what it would really be like in real life, okay? Because I know, you know, I work in an office, stuff like that. An alarm goes off, you know, and people just kind of sit there for a second. And they look at each other and they go, "Is that the fire alarm? That sounds like the fire alarm. Should we get out? Should we go? Should we leave?" You know, because everyone's convinced that it's a, you know, they're just testing something, or they're rewiring something or whatever. Nobody takes those things seriously anymore. Everyone sits around for 30 seconds and looks for confirmation from somebody else to actually get out of the building. So, you know, if we did this scene the way it would really happen, these guys would all be sitting there going, "Is that the anthrax alarm? I think that's the anthrax. No, it's maybe it's sarin gas. It's either anthrax or sarin gas. Should we get out of the building? Maybe not. No, maybe. Are they getting out of the building down the hall? I don't know. Should we go? Maybe let's ask our supervisor, you know, so."
Right. Unfortunately, I mean, that's what happened on 9/11.
Well, yeah.
You know, that they're, you know, people were waiting for an explanation, and, you know, they waited a little too long. And a lot of them just said, "Oh, no, it's nothing. Just go back to your desks."
Well, and I suppose in a government building, you know, they're going to be a little bit more on top of those things, I'm sure.
I think you have more faith in government buildings than I do.
Well, yeah. It's the FBI. The FBI, they're paying attention. They know the difference between the fire alarm and an anthrax alarm.
I give you the FBI. All right. So I don't know. I wouldn't necessarily trust them either.
Yeah, it's all.
Sorry about that. I know you're trying to be positive, but no.
No.
Sorry. Nice try. And at this point, they decide that they got to get out of there. So Bowman starts trying to get people out. He goes, "All right, everyone out now, Taylor, move. And, everyone just gets up. They're leaving their computers as is, and everyone's walking out. And Bowman's looking around, making sure that everyone gets out, because he sees that people don't really want to leave. And then he says, mm-hmm. you know, then we get a shot of the outside of the building where everyone is just gathering around, and we see people streaming out of the Capitol also at the same time, which, you know, people are casually walking out, and then the shock changes.
We get various buildings, you know, we get, and people are covering their faces with you know, their handkerchiefs and things like that, which you're always kind of like, is that really going to do you that much good? I don't know, you know, and so, but we get all these general shots of buildings, but then we get the one where they have to tell us, because it's not a recognizable building to us, that it's the Social Security building. You know, we know the Capitol, but they show us this random building. They have to establish what it is for us with text on the screen.
Correct. And because this is going to be slightly important through the rest of this movie, slightly, right. You know, it's in Woodlawn, Maryland. And we hear on the loudspeaker, all personnel must evacuate. This is not a drill. All personnel must evacuate and proceed to the transportation shuttles immediately. You know, and we see people coming out of the woodwork there. You know, everyone's, they have a security guard showing people which way to go. And here we also see people with masks over their faces. You know, this is pre COVID, and people have masks at the time. And then we see that the cameras are watching them closely. You know, we don't know why the cameras are watching them. And then we get a shot of all the chaos outside of the FBI building. And Bowman then walks over and starts talking to two guys there. Don't really know who they are. And then someone says to him, "We need you inside, sir." So he knows at that point that he needs to go in. And then we see a hazmat van show up, and two guys get out, followed by the rest of the. And then the commander says to them, he goes, "Take your time. I want men on the fourth floor. Got it? Masks on. We got to know what's there." And, they're very concerned about what's going on here with this hazmat stuff. And then you have the other truck where everyone gets out. And then Bowman is inside of a truck, and thankfully they're able to still connect all their computers. And
they have a very quick makeshift command center here.
That's right. And he goes, "Run a trunk search on those data crashes. Try to ID the point of origin." they like throwing out all of this, technical gobbledygob. You know,
yeah.
We're supposed to understand what a trunk search is. I have no idea. You know, I've been working with computers for 30 years. I've never heard of that type of thing. But okay. If
you say it with enough conviction, and it convinces us, yep.
That's right. And then we get another shot of a bunch of different screens. We see like TV screens, and this is live. Congress evacuated, government buildings vacated, anthrax alert. You know, different headlines for different things there. And Gabriel says, "Begin stage two." And then we see a shot of Wall Street, back a callback to two seasons ago with Die Hard with a Vengeance.
Oh yeah. Mm-hmm.
And we see stockbrokers looking at the various stock what are they called, the stock symbols.
Yeah, like, I mean, none of it makes sense to me. I've always. The whole stock market thing is one of the most confusing things that we have. I mean, you know, it always just comes across to me as a bunch of people yelling at each other and throwing paper around. I have no idea what they're actually doing.
I agree. And I've seen Wall Street numerous times. I still don't understand. So.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, even like, there's the sequence in Ferris Bueller's Day Off where they're at the Chicago Stock Exchange. I even remember going on a field trip to the Chicago Stock Exchange when I was probably in junior high or something like that. And yeah, it just seems like absolute chaos. I can't understand how anything actually happens in these places. It doesn't make any sense to me at all.
Well, that's why neither of us works in stocks.
Exactly.
Now, so they give us all of these different stock ticket numbers and stuff like that. I started looking them up, and the first one I looked up was, okay, there really is a BV. You know, it's Brightview Holdings. I was like, oh, great, this is great. And then the one next to it is SST. So I looked that up, okay. And it's System 1. Okay, And then none of the others are real. As of today, again, based on my search, I searched, you know, you can go to Yahoo Finance and look up stock symbols, you know, and stuff like that. And most of these just don't exist. So
you should have just made things up, Rob. You could have been like, try to find some things that match these. I mean, some of them could easily, I'm looking at the screen right now. There's PVC, which, you could be like, okay, well, that's the people that make the pipes, right? PVC piping is a type of thing, so that could be them. There's MM, which, I mean, I'll just in my mind make that B for M&Ms. It's the candy, it's M&M Mars. Okay. I see SB, which of course my brain sees SB and it thinks Shaw Brothers, which is of course the famous Hong Kong martial arts movie studio. So that'll be Shaw Brothers here for us. So yeah, just make up anything. It's okay.
Well, my understanding is it's probably, like initials of people in the movie.
Yes. Yes. Crew members, what have you.
Yeah. But because they apparently use middle names for most of them. So, we're not going to be able to find them. But again, that would be my guess. Whether it is or isn't, I wouldn't know. Based on what I found, they're not real. they're not the real symbols.
Call up your broker and try to invest in JVT or, OYT and see where you get,
That's true. And again, we see everyone just going nuts on the stock market floor. They give us a great shot of all these guys doing what you just said, screaming at the top of their lungs and throwing papers.
That's all they do there.
That's right. And then Trey says, they're already starting to panic. And Gabriel says, of course they are. They think that someone's taking their money. All those nickels and dimes they saved. All those nickels and dimes they
saved. Says the guy whose ultimate plot is to get money.
That's right. He goes, useful idiots, as Lennon would say. And then he says, prep the video package. So, they're getting ready for something else. We'll have to wait and see what they have in mind. But he's enjoying it. He's enjoying these guys screaming at each other on video on Wall Street. That's what comes out. And he just nonchalantly sips
punchable face.
That's right. He just sips his coffee. And then we're back in the quad outside of the FBI building. And they give us a nice pan on all of these guys walking around. Lots of people with guns. I think Casper would be a little, he'd be wondering why there's so many guns here. Who knows? And then John and Farrell show up. And John walks him through the crowd.
Yeah, and quite easily. He walks through the crowd. This is the FBI. And like you said, there's lots of guys with guns and things like that. You'd think somebody would say, hold up there just a second. No, it's okay. I'm NYPD. And he'd be like, dude, you're in Washington, D.C. You're kind of out of your jurisdiction. Get out of here,
That's right. And then Molina is talking on the phone and he puts his hand over the receiver and says, D.C. transportation system's crashing. And they just hit the financial section, all of it. And then Bowman says, get me the Secretary for Trans and Treasury on the line and the Chairman of the SEC. Let's go, people. Somewhere, somebody left a digital fingerprint. Find it. They're looking for that. And then John happens to find the actual truck that Bowman is in. Was pretty easy.
Again, awesome. Very lucky.
That's right. And John goes, Deputy Director Bowman in here? And Molina turns to him and goes, not now. He'll have to wait. Not today, Waxworks. He calls him Waxworks.
Yeah. Waxworks. Which is like, what's he saying? Is he saying the guy looks like a wax figure in a museum or something like that?
Apparently.
Kind of insulting.
Yeah. And he goes, this is
so, of course, that brought to mind for me, have you seen the movie Waxworks?
No. I've heard of it.
With Zach Galligan from Gremlins.
Yeah, I knew it was an 80s movie, but I've never seen it.
Yeah. Should check it out.
Okay.
I'm not as big a fan as other people are, but still.
It's like a horror comedy, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, so I thought.
And there's a sequel too.
Yes.
Waxworks 2, which is something, it's like a time travel thing if I remember correctly.
Waxworks 2 Electric Boogaloo.
No.
And he goes, "Not today, Waxworks. This is Matthew Farrell. I brought him here on orders from Bowman. If you don't know what's going on, find somebody that does." Then Bowman shows up and goes, "I'm Bowman." And, John and Farrell now figure out who Bowman is. You know. But we're going to have to wait and find out what he has to say. And then we're back at Gabriel's lair, and we hear someone, Mai then says, "Video package is ready for upload." And then they look at the screen. We see Casper's screen, and it says "President of the United States" with the presidential feel on the screen. And then we're back with John, who just got his arm wrapped by a medic nearby. And then Bowman says to him, "John, I appreciate you bringing Farrell, but we are neck deep in damage control right now." And then Matt goes, "Excuse me, I'm sorry, sir. Do you have anything to eat? Any snacks around? I got really low blood sugar, sir." And he goes, "No."
Now, I'll tell you what I thought this scene was missing. This is the scene where there should have been a moment where, like, Bowman kind of, you know, something clicks and he's like, "Wait a minute. You're the Nakatomi Plaza guy, that thing at the airport, a few years back, or that thing back in New York City with the bombs and the schools and things like that." There should have been a moment here where it was like, "Oh, you're that guy. You're that always in the wrong place at the wrong time guy. I don't want you messing up my command center here. Get out of here. You're trouble."
I agree with you on the one hand, but I'm actually very glad they didn't do it, because even in number two, it was just too much. You know, with the stuff in the airport, you know, and Lorenzo says all that stuff to him, and you also had Stewart say stuff to him also. It was just too much. So I'm glad they didn't bring it up here. And so, and again, it's been so long. You're that guy who 20 years ago dropped a guy off of a building? Oh, okay.
Yeah, but I guess it feels a little necessary to me, just given the way that, you know, suddenly now John's on their team and he's working, you know, doing stuff for him, and Bowman's along with him, you know, full force through the whole thing. There's a part of me that goes, why should Bowman be trusting this guy at all? You know, he's just some random guy that, you know, a New York cop that happened to show up here in Washington, D.C. It seemed to me like there should have been at least some connection point there, okay, you know, to all the other incidents. I don't know.
That's fair. I understand that. But, and I love the TV screen. So it says "America under attack" with a question mark.
Yes,
you know, Channel 4, and they just show people running out of the Capitol and the home of chaos on Wall Street, just people screaming and throwing papers, as you said. And at this point, and if the transportation breakdown and anthrax scenes weren't enough for one day, the stock market found itself in the selling frenzy. This is on the news. We hear it, and then we hear it on the news, as if the transportation breakdown and anthrax scares weren't enough for one day, the stock market found itself in the selling frenzy. The FTC believes that panic might have been triggered by a computer malfunction in the stock exchange, thought to be unrelated. And then, you know, John and Farrell and Bowman start talking, and they go, "Man, this is bad." And then Bowman says, "It's not as bad as it looks. We run drills to prepare for things like this. You know, we anticipate little things like this." You know, that's like the stewardess said that in Die Hard 2.
They do drills.
That's right.
So they know which alarm is the anthrax alarm.
That's right. Exactly. And then we hear in the background from the news report that someone says terrorist attack. That's all we can hear from the whole thing. And then John looks over at the what we talked about at the beginning of today's episode, the wall of headshots.
Right.
And John goes, "These are suspects." Bowman says, "Were all seven were killed in the last 24 hours." And then John looks over, and John starts making the connection here. And then he looks over at yeah. Farrell and he goes, "You recognize any of these people?" "No, not one." And he shakes his head. And John knows that there is a connection here. And, once again, Farrell is supposed to be really smart, but he doesn't always put two and two together with everything that's going on. Like he's looking back and forth trying to figure out what the hell are you talking about?
And he's just not a good liar.
Correct. No, but he doesn't know that. You think he's aware of the fact that this is connected to what he did?
Well, I mean, they do establish later on in the movie that he does know, because John has a moment where he says to him, "Don't lie to me, kid. You know, or you know, I know you're lying before." I remember what the exact wording was, but I imagine that Farrell recognizes these people on there, and he's like, "Well, here I'm standing in a bunch of FBI agents. If I let on that I know about this, they're gonna lock me up."
Okay, makes sense. And then Bowman's thoughts are interrupted when we hear someone say, "Sir, we got a," and then that's where this segment ends.
Cliffhanger. Right.
But people won't have to wait until tomorrow to find out, what we're going to be talking about with that. So, Todd, did you have anything else you wanted to say about this minute?
No, I think we hit all of it.
All right. Excellent. So, the third segment that we do with every guest is a game called 6 Degrees of Bruce Willis. Okay, it's a very simple game.
Okay,
I'm assuming you're familiar with the idea of 6 Degrees of Kevin Bacon, right?
Yes.
The idea is that you can connect any actor to Kevin Bacon within 6 connections, meaning Kevin. The actor was in a movie with so-and-so, who was in a movie with so-and-so, who was in a movie with so-and-so, until you get to Kevin Bacon. So this game is a very simple one. It's how you can get from Bruce Willis to other actors, the same way.
Okay.
So right. I have 5 different actors that we're going to be dealing with today that you have to try to figure out how to make a connection between Bruce Willis and these actors. So the first one is Kevin Bacon. How would you connect Bruce Willis and Kevin Bacon?
Oh, okay. Bruce Willis and Kevin Bacon. Let's see here.
Now, again, just one thing. There's so many different options for the whole thing. Very few of these are, only one choice. It's very rare.
Right. Okay, I used to be good at this game, but we'll see here. Let's try this. All right, I think I've got it. So Kevin Bacon is in A Few Good Men with, of course, Bruce Willis's wife, Demi Moore, who he was in several movies with, but I just picked Mortal Thoughts because I know they're in that one together.
Great. So,
Kevin Bacon to A Few Good Men to Demi Moore to Mortal Thoughts.
Excellent. So I found 2 that fit in also. Also at the ranking of 2. Okay, so you have Bruce Willis was in 12 Monkeys with Brad Pitt. And Brad Pitt was in Sleepers with Kevin Bacon.
Okay.
And then another one, which I sort of like better, even though it's a little harder to sell because most people don't know the second actor, but you do have Kevin Bacon was in a movie that I did during season 2, Remember what movie that was?
Season two was, oh shoot. Oh, well, Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. Yeah.
Okay. So what actor was in Planes, Trains, and Automobiles and was also in Die Hard with a Vengeance?
You told me.
I know I did.
I forgot already. No, I don't remember.
Played one of the bad guys in Die Hard with a Vengeance.
Okay.
Does that help at all or not?
No, I don't got it. No, I don't have it.
Bruce Willis was in Die Hard with a Vengeance with Nicholas Wyman, who played one of the bad guys. And Nicholas Wyman was in Planes, Trains, and Automobiles with Kevin Bacon. Nicholas Wyman played the lawyer who Steve Martin's character Neil paid for to tried bribing him to give him the taxi, and then Dell stole the taxi at the beginning of the movie.
Okay. All right.
All right. Excellent. So next one is Jack Palance. How can you connect Jack Palance with Bruce Willis?
Okay. My brain starts. We're going to get to Bruce Willis. My brain keeps trying to go to Kevin Bacon. Shouldn't do that.
That's a problem. I'll give you a hint. Think of the most common Jack Palance movie the first Jack Palance movie that comes to mind.
And
I'm not talking about Cops and Robertson.
No. Do we want to talk through it together? Because I keep hitting a wall.
Okay.
I don't want to stretch out your podcast too long.
Okay. Here. So where?
Because you still got the first place I was trying to go, and I assume this is what you meant by most common is City Slickers.
Okay. Go to the sequel.
City Slickers yes. 2.
And then think of someone that we talked about earlier with the ground.
John Lovitz, because that would be different than City Slickers mm-hmm. 1. Okay. And is Lovitz in something with Willis? Oh my yes, gosh. What is he in with Willis?
Joe Pesci type character.
Oh boy. I don't get it. I don't know. What is it?
National Lampoon's Loaded Weapon.
Oh, well, I haven't seen that in forever. What's Willis is in Loaded Weapon?
They blow up his trailer. And then they say, oh, we blew up the wrong trailer. He said, all right, no problem. I'm used to it.
Oh, I haven't seen that movie in probably 30 years.
Okay. So. All right.
You got me on that one.
Jack Palance was in City Slickers 2 with John Lovitz, who was in National Lampoon's Loaded Weapon with Bruce Willis. Okay.
The other route I kept trying to go with Palance was through Batman.
You can do that too.
Having trouble finding a connection there.
There are a bunch of them through Batman also.
But
most of them are smaller characters, which is why I didn't want to go there. You have a character named an actor named Christopher Fairbank, who was also in The Fifth Element with Bruce Willis.
Okay,
he was also in Tango and Cash. Jack Palance was in Tango and Cash with
Sylvester Stallone and Kurt Russell.
And Kurt Russell was in what movie was he with Bruce Willis? I can't remember. There is a movie that two of them were in together. I can't remember.
Well, and is Willis in an Expendables?
Yes, he is.
So there, you're going to go through Stallone with that.
That's true. But but Stallone was with was Jack Palance in something?
Well, if Jack Palance was in Tango and Cash, Stallone is in Tango and Cash.
Right. Yeah. Right. So Kurt Russell and Bruce Willis were in Grindhouse together.
Oh, okay.
Okay. All right, the next one is Jason Alexander.
Jason Alexander. Well, that you don't even need. You can do that in one, because Jason Alexander is in North, and so is Bruce Willis.
See, I tried getting you on that one.
Oh, glad I got that one.
Okay, the next one is Kevin Kline.
Kevin Kline. Okay. Well, let's go through a route we were just talking about a moment ago, then. Ending with Willis in an Expendables movie. I don't remember which Expendables he's in, though, so maybe that's cheating. But Kline is in A Fish Called Wanda with Jamie Lee Curtis. Jamie Lee Curtis is in True Lies with Arnold Schwarzenegger. Arnold Schwarzenegger is in is he in that same Expendables movie?
I think they're together, yes, they are. But again,
yeah, they're together.
But that's so, three. and you can actually do it in two. There are ways of doing it in two.
Okay.
Okay, so you have think Zemeckis.
Start with Kevin Klein. Zemeckis. We'll start okay.
The other with Zemeckis.
Well, go Bruce Willis to Death Becomes Her.
Okay, and who's in Death Becomes Her?
Meryl Streep.
Meryl Streep was in what movie with Kevin Klein?
Oh, is it one of those fancy ones I haven't seen yet? Is it The French Lieutenant's Woman?
No.
Is that it?
Nope.
No? Sophie's Choice? There you go. Okay. See, I haven't seen either of those yet, so I got them mixed up.
All right, and the final one is Christian Slater.
Oh, I was thinking Slater a minute ago for something. Okay, wait a sec. All right. Oh, geez. Why was I thinking about Christian Slater? Okay. Slater is in Murder in the First with Kevin Bacon, and then we can follow the rest of the Kevin Bacon route that we already did. So that would get us.
Okay, but that's three, and you can do it in two.
What else is Christian Slater in? Yes, I got it. It was on my podcast, for crying out loud. Christian Slater's in Cuffs with Mila Jovovich, who of course is in The Fifth Element.
Wow, that's great. That's great. Now
you did that on purpose, didn't you?
Well, of course I did it on purpose. That goes with my thing. But the connection that I was thinking of, Christian Slater was in Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves with who?
With Alan Rickman. Okay. Well, that's a good one too.
All right. Well, thank you for playing. I hope you found that, you found that fun going through.
Oh yeah. I put too much pressure on myself with that game. So yeah, but it was
good. Some of them you did really well. I was very impressed with North. There you go. On that one. I was trying to trip you up on that one. And, you saw through my ploy. All right. So every day we have a daily segment called State Your Motto. All right. So once again, I will give you three choices of real state mottos, and you have to tell me which of them is the state motto of Illinois. All right.
Okay.
So the first option is "With God, all things are possible." The second choice is "The Crossroads of America." The third choice is "State Sovereignty, National Union."
I'm going to say the second one.
You missed it again. Illinois is State Sovereignty, National Union.
Okay. I just always say Land of Lincoln because that's what's on the license plates.
Well, again, these are state mottos, not Land of Lincoln
they're not always on license plates.
I don't even know what it's not state motto. What would you call it? The state.
No, it's a nickname. I guess it would be a nickname. It's like you call it New York the Empire State, or Colorado is the Centennial State.
Michigan was the Wolverine State. Yeah. Mm. Maybe it's a state nickname. Maybe that's what it is. Maybe that's what you would call it.
Yeah.
All right. Excellent. So, Todd, would you like for one last time this season to tell everyone how they can get in touch with you?
Yeah, absolutely. So my blog is at forgottenfilmcast.wordpress.com. You'll find links there to my podcast, which is called The Forgotten Filmcast. You can find it wherever you find your podcasts. Follow me on X at Forgotten Films. Films is spelled with a Z. You can find Forgotten Films on Facebook, and you can find me on Letterboxd.
All right, excellent. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Rob Minute. You can find me on Facebook. You can find me on Twitter. You can find me on Instagram. You can find me on my website, movierobminute.com. And if you want to send me an email, you can send it to movierobminute@movierob.net. So thank you, Todd, for joining me over the last three episodes.
My pleasure.
And I look forward to hoping to have you back next season.
Absolutely.
All right.
Always game.
So I will be back tomorrow with a new guest. But until then, yippee-ki-yay.
Yippee-ki-yay.
Some folks are born made to wave the flag. Oh, they're red, white, and blue, yeah. But it ain't me. It ain't me. I ain't no fortunate one.